So when I was looking at the lineup of speakers, it really was hard for me to think of something relevant to talk about that I didn't learn from them directly or from anyone in this room in the time that I've been a member, about a year and a half. Before I came to the ANA, I was like many in our spheres. I was hopelessly entangled in foreign ideologies and movements, having barely a clue about the rich political, intellectual, and artistic traditions raised from the wellspring of my nation's own blood and soil. My mental gymnastics were impeccable. I was living in this country, but for another, with a vague understanding that one day I would return home to a place I'd only ever been on brief holidays to. But whether it was Europa or Britannia or some other long extinguished white society, there was something that never sat right. I was daydreaming about oaks and meadows while the great plains and gum trees lay waiting. I still subconsciously couldn't shake the frame of mind that the Australian continent was alien to the European, and that the days of our settlement here were numbered by mere fact of nature, and that anything native to this land was bound to be a mere dilution of a more pure European civilization at best. Of course, I appreciate how juvenile that thinking was in retrospect. As Percy Stevenson writes, culture in Australia, if it ever develops indigenously, begins not from the Aborigines, but from British culture brought hither by Englishmen, Irishmen, and Scotsmen throughout the 19th century. He goes on, in a new and quite different environment from that of those damp British islands, we are here developing the culture which evolved there. We inherit all that Britain has inherited, and from that point we go on to what? That last point is most important. From what? Essentially the question was what now? And the only answer I could come up with back then amounted to worshipping a dying flame, if not the ashes themselves. Alas, even the best mental gymnast can only perform for so long. As I grew a bit older and real life kicked in, my interest in all this was relegated to a mere hobby. Still, I yearned for something greater. I kept my eyes and ears open to the movements of the day, movements that came and went. In cycle after cycle of media hysteria, as banners were dropped and Romans were thrown. Still, I never found something compelling or convincing enough to dedicate myself and my labours to, in the somewhat faint hope that I too could make a measure of difference. It wasn't really until COVID was brought to our shores that I renewed my interest in everything political. Within 48 hours of the first case in Australia, I had lost my job, and within 72, I was on the road to Byzantium. I suddenly had a lot of spare time on my hands, and I again yearned for a movement, but I had changed, matured, maybe. My interest in German painters had long since subsided, and residual love I still felt for Britannia and her empire was quickly becoming reserved for the young southern nation she left in her passing. The nation I had come to know more personally now, being free from the toxic haze that blankets the Greater Sydney region. Finally, I found the Australian Natives Association, an organisation I'd read about very tangentially in the context of Australia's Federation, and an organisation I thought was like most others of its kind, either long past or compromised. Thanks to Dio on Twitter, the Aesthetics account, and the website, I now knew that wasn't the case, and I somewhat clumsily rushed an application out of excitement. All that searching and all the learning that followed culminated in me standing here today with these very shaky legs. And now I think I'd describe the whole thing as a long walk home. The thing that strikes me now is how natural it feels. And how ridiculous it seems that our views aren't the standard, at least among proclaimed Australian nationalists. I'm sure most of these sentiments would be familiar to you all, and me repeating them may seem somewhat tautological. But somewhere therein lies the point. My story in this regard is not an especially unique one. And the times we're experiencing are bound to see this story repeat itself again and again in the lives of our people. Housing, cost of living, crime, peak oil, as Keith spoke about. The list goes on, and they are all followed by the word crisis in national conversation. Meanwhile, those who would never form kinship with us and could never build a country like ours continue to pour in relentlessly at the behest of our own government. This storm may well garner swathes of those who have a natural but apolitical love of country, and further awaken the politically active. Sure, the likes of the young LNP or NSN or even the newly formed British Australia community may house some of them, and more power to them. But if I was a betting man, I would place my bet on many of them feeling the same discomfort and cognitive dissonance that we all know so well. Those who cannot satisfy that itch in their mind will do as I and many of us here did. They will wander until they too arrive home. Or in some rare cases, they'll remain oblivious of us until they start promoting nativism of their own accord, which is all the more proof that we're on the right track. We need not pretend that these numbers must be huge. We know that our focus is on building a movement of quality over quantity, or before quantity, I should say. But I contend that the particular nature of these trying times will turn the heads of those very men in our country who possess the quality of nation builders. I'll attempt to demonstrate my point with a somewhat relevant example of a movement we can label as nativist overseas. Orania. Orania is a town in South Africa, and you've probably heard of it. You might even know all about it. It's an Afrikaner-only town of around 2,300 people, carving out what little claim they have left there in the semi-arid and sparsely populated Northern Cape. In a country like South Africa, a country now so renowned for its farm murders, its crippling incompetence in all forms of government, it's now long since initiated total societal breakdown. In that country, these mere 2,300 souls have created a self-sufficient agricultural economy and construction industry and achieved a state of energy independence from the quickly disintegrating national grid, which is characterized now by frequent load shedding and other unplanned interruptions. The town has also built its own sewage systems, treatment plants, and the like. Funnily enough, Orania's local TIP was the only one in that region to comply with the regulations set by the national government, and the only one of a handful in the entire country. You can guess the demographics of the others too. This small but motivated population is developing quickly, and according to their very active propagandists, they see an annual population increase around 16%. They dedicate themselves to preserving not merely their white identity, but their Afrikaner identity specifically. An admirable cause, I'm sure we can all agree. But I want to imagine how much progress they could have made if their struggle was undertaken in a largely stable country like that of our own, where the demographics are still somewhat in our favour. I contend that our attitude towards political action should be along this same vein. I'm not advocating that we go full Billy Lane mode and hedge our bets in a new Oz near somewhere, at least not necessarily. But I am certainly advocating that we continue our efforts with all the fervour and commitment we can muster to take this spirit of kinship and movement building into our wider respective communities. Just as the original ANA did, and as some of the veteran members in this room have done for us. To those members, I'm sure I speak for us all when I say thank you. Every little step and every small opportunity that can be taken now rather than later is a step in the right direction. Generational struggle is already a reality in my mind, and now all our minds. But I find comfort in that, because generational struggle, conducted successfully, ingrains itself into the psyche of a people and deepens their ties to each other. Whatever the future of our nation holds, whether it slips from our grasp and begins to rhyme with that same song repeated in almost every other white settlement in the Southern Hemisphere, or whether our fortunes change and victory becomes inevitable, this organisation, us in this room and those who couldn't make it, will be for Australia what the Iranian is for the Afrikaners. A highly motivated vanguard class, hell-bent on the preservation of the Australian and our unique cultural heritage. We alone will advance our interests, free from those external political and cultural influences that have had a firm stranglehold on our people in the past. Although we do have the great honour of knowing members in our midst, who themselves lived in the Australia we now all idolise. We were all born too late to have a hand in founding our nation. We are also, to my great despair, born far too early to see the dreams for it come true. Dreams like an ANA hall in every town, nuclear-powered Fortress Australia, and total settler defeat. Like the colonisation of our Antarctic territories and Queenslander-style cattle stations on Mars. We are, however, born when we are, And by being born in this era, we have been given what I now see as a most humbling duty. To try and save our nation, people, and culture, of course, but also to shape the aspirations and dreams of those generations of Australians to come, and to do whatever we can to set the stage for those dreams to be realised. This has already been done in varying scales, and we can sift through our very own history to find numerous examples. After all, Australia was first loved in the hearts of those currency lads and lasses a century before federation and nationhood was realised. Throughout that time, Australia's course was not guaranteed. Were we to be a nation or a colony, agrarian or industrial? Were we to be white, yellow, or piebald? Were we to be a beacon of civilization in the Pacific, a new Britannia in the southern seas, or just another post-imperial favela? All of these battles and more were fought by those who knew that same love for this country and dreamed of what it could be, many of whom fought under our banner and with our name. This is the mantle we have been passed, our cross to bear, and it will be my greatest honour to bear it with you all. Our work is cut out for us and our enemies are plentiful, but with the Lord in our hearts and the Natives Association by our side, the future is ours for the taking. Thank you. Thank you.